Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me, as always. Go to themichiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. A lot of updates. Pretty busy time for Michigan football. Michigan basketball, a couple weeks around the corner. Football's still our probably top priority right now. I just posted, for those interested, a film review continuing our discussion looking at what went wrong for the Wolverines at Wisconsin. Two stats that really stood out to me. Well, actually, there's three. One, Michigan had 11 rushing yards before contact in 13 carries on Saturday, which is just unbelievable. You know, we talk about the run game needs to be better. The run blocking needs to be better because those running backs didn't even have a chance. And then Jonathan Taylor got brought down just 12 times. He was brought down to the ground on Saturday in 24 touches. Another unbelievable stat. So either he did the whole forward progress thing, got sidelined, or scored. So quite a lot to work on for Michigan. And let's jump into that discussion because, frankly, and you said it just before the show, so I'll let you say it again too, but this week Michigan plays Rutgers. If Michigan loses, the season was never anything. This team was never bought in anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I'm assuming that they're going to win. And so, Steve, this week I think is about Michigan not necessarily restarting or reigniting, but maybe getting further grasping what they want to be this season. And we'll dig into it a little bit more, but this is also a game that's very much about kind of the emotions of the season. How do you control things when things get out of control? How do you grab the steering wheel back? You know, I think this is a huge test for Jim Harbaugh. I think it's a huge test for both of his coordinators, Don Brown and Josh Gattis. It's a huge test for Shea Patterson. And then also that defense. You know, this is I think just about every team Michigan's ever had has lost one game. And, you know, I think Devin Gardner might have said it earlier this week. He said, you know, the first loss, it's the second loss that's really the dagger in the season. Your first loss, your season isn't over. And so it's how you respond to that first loss. What do you do with it? Last year, Michigan lost in week one. It wasn't quite as bad as the loss to Wisconsin was, but it was still pretty bad. And then they responded, rattled off 10 straight wins, and were in everything was on the table heading into the last week of the season. So big response week. You know, I know the players talked a lot about being punched in the mouth. That's the common phrase that they've been using. So do you fall? Do you fall to the mat? You know, have a glass jaw? Or do you, to continue the analogy, get up and go down swinging? So big need for a response. And Steve, I know you said it, didn't mean to steal your thunder there, but just before the show you're talking, this is Michigan. Michigan's kind of playing itself this week. It's got to show that it's an internal battle. Because there's a long season ahead with a lot of tests. Unless this team just really isn't that good, this is not supposed to be one of those tests.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the opponent is going to be the opponent. They are facing Rutgers at the right time, I think. The other thing I'd mention was a nice little sort of progression of tests coming up until the next, what I would say, well, I shouldn't, why am I, I'm dismissing Iowa a little bit too much, but they do get them at home where, again, they just, outside of the game against Army, Michigan has usually looked crisp at home under Harbaugh, right? And so they've always just looked different. And so then you have Iowa at home after this week, and then you go on the road against another inferior opponent, but again, it's on the road in Illinois, and then you go to Penn State. And so I think this week, yeah, is much more of a, because Michigan could come out and score 60 points on Saturday. The film could look good. Everybody could be happy.
Who cares? Beat Ohio State.
Right, and that's, but again,
but it's true.
At this point. Zach, that stuff is, I think it's much more important.
No, I didn't, yeah.
I know what you mean. But that will be the response if they come out and obliterate them, right? So I think, yeah, I think this Saturday, it's much more about can Michigan please themselves with their performance. You know, can they go into the film room on Monday and Tuesday and be satisfied with what they saw on both sides of the football, right? And so, you know, that's where every game is important. This game against Rutgers is way more important than we maybe thought it would be this early in the season, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's one thing if Michigan had lost on Saturday. It's another thing to lose the way that they did. I mean, those stats you mentioned at the beginning are horrible, especially within the context, especially that offensive stat when you consider, again, four all Big Ten starters returning up front. I mean, just a pitiful, against a really a defensive front who was starting a true freshman at nose tackle. And really, I don't think that Wisconsin's front, at least their defensive line, not going to be one of the top, what, four or five that they'll face. You still have Iowa's. AJ Epenesa is better than anybody in Wisconsin's roster.
Sure.
Notre Dame's got Khalid Kareem, Dalen Hayes, Okwara. Ohio State with Chase Young, who might be the best pure just yeah. football player in the country. And then, of course, Michigan State, who might have the best front seven in the Big Ten, you know, with Willekes and Raekwon Williams, you know. And again, Wisconsin's good. Again, I'm not trying to.
I think I'd put Wisconsin just a little ahead of. I put Wisconsin ahead of Iowa.
Oh, man.
I think it's a push with Penn State. But still.
Well, even then,
I
didn't even mention Penn State. You know, and think about that with Gross Matos. I mean, I'd say every one of those teams I mentioned, plus Penn State, has at least one individual player that's better than anybody on Wisconsin's front line.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
You know, and so, and that's where it's like, wow. You know, because again, I think you consider how well Michigan ran the ball last year against Wisconsin. You know, there's been this almost like a back and forth between these two programs when they play, that one team just seems to just obliterate the other team on the ground. In a given game. You know, I go back to, I don't remember, was it Rich Rod or Hoke, where Wisconsin ran the ball like 30 straight times or something like that, like ran the same.
Yeah, it was Rich Rod.
Yeah, you know.
I don't think Hoke ever faced Wisconsin,
true,
actually.
True, so, yeah, that's right. I know there was that gap there. But yeah, so, yeah, this Saturday, it is. It's much more about the stuff that fans, media, that we won't maybe see or hear after the game, right? And because, again, I think, you know, yeah, things are on the precipice. I mean, I'd say even if they struggle, if they do struggle in this game on Saturday, I think we're in real danger territory. I mean, they're already in danger territory, and the idea that they can't, if any of their preseason goals are to be realized, they can't slip up again. I guess maybe outside of losing to Notre Dame, they could still battle for the Big Ten championship. But, you know, going to the playoffs, which is really, I mean, let's be honest, laughable to consider at this point, is still mm-hmm. it's still alive, though. I mean, as far as the technical sense, because they do play such a tough schedule going forward. Yes. But, you know, I think, like I said, I think what we see on Saturday will be more about maybe what we don't hear about or what we won't be able to write about. You know, it'll be more of the where's the confidence at in the locker room? Where's the confidence at in the coaches, you know, on Harbaugh's part regarding, yeah, like you said, each of his respective coordinators, you know, because that's all we talked about in the Wisconsin recap was just how out of sorts Michigan looked offensively, which is inexcusable for such a talented and experienced unit. So, yeah, I mean, all these games are meaningful, and this is a much more meaningful game against Rutgers than Michigan has maybe ever had against them, at least that I can remember. So, should be interesting. Oh, it's definitely the most important game they've had against Rutgers. I mean,
they were in a similar spot 2 years ago, but they had suffered. Was it the first loss or the second loss? Because they played Rutgers last year, or no, in 2017, also coming off a loss. I think that was after the second loss, though. But yeah, this is more important than I think anybody could have possibly expected. And as you said, it's internal, and so we'll try to tackle this in a few different ways, but what I'm curious about, and maybe this is probably a better question for our listeners to maybe ponder too, so feel free to weigh in afterward, but my angle previewing this game is, what can Michigan show? Because they don't get to beat Ohio State Saturday, they don't get to take back the Wisconsin game, they don't get to win the Big Ten and clinch the playoff on Saturday, they don't get to prove it on the road or prove it against a good team. So is there anything Michigan can do? And that's rhetorical. Of course, there are things Michigan can do. But what sort of things can Michigan do on Saturday for you and I to believe that Michigan is not in as much trouble? Because I think it'd be hard for me to be convinced that they're not in trouble if they, no matter how badly they beat Rutgers. But what sort of things can you look at? And let's start with the head coach, Jim Harbaugh, because I've been pondering on this thought, because people constantly are asking. They've been asking basically since 2016, is Harbaugh different? He seems different. But this is a big week for him, because no matter what happens or no matter what the rumors are, whatever, a team is going to be divided in a giant blowout loss. They always are. No team has ever lost by, you know, or been down by 5 touchdowns in a game, because they didn't technically lose by 5 touchdowns. But no team has ever been spanked like that with high expectations and not had some divisive moments afterward. And so this is a big moment for Jim Harbaugh, because, you know, there's a lot of skeptics, not just of the team, of him. And we're not even going to discuss, you know, the different hot seat. Is he playing for his job? No. But he is for his entire season, what he built the entire offseason for, is hanging in the balance, and he has to rally this team and get everyone on the same page. You know, he has to have a moment kind of similar to Bo Schembechler's the team, the team, the team speech. He's got to have something like that, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a speech, but in how he coaches this team, there has to be something where he's able to unite this team again. And I'm not saying that they're divided or there's trouble in the locker room. I just know, because every player who's played football that I've talked to has said, after a loss like this, you know, there's going to be finger pointing, there's going to be blaming, there's going to be consternation about this player at that position or this or that. So this is a big chance for Jim Harbaugh to unite the team. And frankly, you know, I'm not involved in practices or anything, so I don't actually know if he's formally changed. But I do remember covering the team in 2015, 2016, and covering it since then, and it has changed. And I think he always, one strength that I thought he really had at Stanford and San Francisco is that he had a very youthful energy in his coaching. I mean, he's the guy that came in a little too hot with the handshake after beating Jim Schwartz. So the guy that, I mean, remember he was mic'd up, I think, for the Orange Bowl. And he sounded like a quarterback out there. He didn't sound like a head coach. He sounded like a quarterback. And so I do wonder. I mean, that's, you know, that's who he is. He was always known as a very fiery, lower-your-shoulder player. I don't know that he's necessarily changed from that. But I think one thing I'll be looking for is, what does he look like? Body language, what he's saying, maybe some of the speeches they post online, what we hear about from players after the game, what we hear from Jim after the game. Is this a... Because, you know, the whole team's doing soul searching. And I don't think Jim Harbaugh is unique from that. I don't think he's exempt. I think he's soul searching too. And so I'm curious to see what he looks like. I don't know about you, Steve. I don't feel like he looks like the same coach that he was when he was leading Stanford to unforeseen heights and upset wins and leading San Francisco to somewhere that no one ever expected them to get to that quickly. You know, beating the Patriots in Foxborough, you know, all these different things. I think I'm curious to see what kind of fire Jim Harbaugh comes out with on Saturday. Again, I don't think that's why they lost 35-0, but this is a big chance for him to kind of reestablish the identity of this team, the culture of this team, unite the team, and get them in the right headspace, because we were just talking about it, the defensive fronts they have to face this year. Every position's like that. You know, everyone says, oh, Jonathan Taylor's a generational talent. Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of players that they still have to face that look like generational talents. Wisconsin might be the best offensive line, but there's a lot of other good O-lines. There's a lot of other good running backs. Quarterback, receiver. I mean, just go down the list. They face, what, 5 other top 20 teams this year? Notre Dame almost, you know, they pushed Georgia to the brink on the road. Ohio State looks as good as they've always been. Penn State, you have to go at Penn State and do it. Michigan State looked pretty solid, stomping Northwestern on the road. Curious to see what the coaching staff looks like. Not even necessarily from an X's and O's perspective, although I'm curious about that too. But what's the demeanor like? What is the attitude and the identity of the team on Saturday? Steve, what's something you're looking for from the coaches?
I mean, I'll go more the other route with the X's and O's and just looking for some cohesiveness offensively. Mm-hmm. Again, what we saw on Saturday was coming off of a bye week, you know, and that's where it's can they all get on the same page in like what four more practices? You know, it's just
right.
And that's where I'm interested. One of the things I'm more interested to see in game wise on Saturday is, let's say they come out of the gates and maybe struggle a little bit. I'd want to see how they respond from a situation like that. I think if they come out and struggle to begin the game, not necessarily even a turnover, but let's say they, you know, don't move the ball well the first couple drives. I think that how they respond to even that we will learn more about what this team is going to be by the way that they could respond. So, but not saying that, you know, if they do come out on fire, they come out, you know, play crisp ball to begin the game, you know, that's what you want. I mean, I'm not saying, hey, let's see them go through another negative situation to learn what they're all about. I mean, kind of though. Right. But if they do come out crisp, then again, we know the opponent, so nobody has to lecture us about who they're playing on Saturday. But if they do come out crisp, that's a building block for them. I think, again, a lot of this could just be a lot of the film work coming off of this game was just a lot of unsuredness, not confusion, but like just maybe a step off in a lot of areas, you know. And I think building some, I'm more looking at the offensive side of the ball still. And I know the defense was very poor on Saturday. I still feel like with more seasoning that unit is still going to be by and large okay. Will they be what they've been in the past under Don Brown? It's hard to imagine that unless, again, they find an answer in the interior, which is a whole different subject. But offensively, I think is where, because again, I think we'd agree going into this season, this was going to be the year that Michigan's offense was going to be carrying them, and that the defense was going to be solid, but that they weren't going to be, yeah, a top five, top three type unit, no matter what we heard, you know, from them during spring and fall ball. And instead, it's just been a disaster all the way around. I have more confidence in how the defense fixing itself as time goes on than I do the offense. So for me, it's about how they come out offensively. And if they do struggle early on offensively, does it manifest itself, you know, and does it just spiral out of control with, you know, again, disagreement, infighting, you know, again, because that's, you know, that was the other thing. You had a lot of guys that want the ball. They're not doing a good job of getting it to them. The offensive line has been the regression there, or at least what we've seen so far has been regression compared to what we saw last year. Just want to see how they come out offensively. See if they do change anything stylistically at all. You know, I think one of the ironic things was, I think that one of the biggest complaints was that they weren't giving Ben Mason the ball offensively, and then they do, and now that was like this big like thing now that, oh, I can't believe they gave him the ball. I granted I know it wasn't third and one, but at the same time, you know, he's a guy that people have been clamoring for to get back on the field offensively. It fails, and people now are almost kind of backtracking and criticizing, you know, them for using Ben Mason in any kind of situation. So just interested to see if the approach changes, or if they believe in what the scheme is, and if they fine tune anything, or, you know, I mean, that's really what I'm looking towards. That, like I said, that, and then if they do struggle early, how they respond. Because I think we'll be able to see very quickly how they do. You know, if they struggle, I think, you know, if they come out of the gate, struggle, and there's a downward spiral, and you can just see it on the field, then you're at like code red level for this team and right, really the program by effect at this point, you know, with that type of deal. So this is much more, at least it's made Saturday more interesting for people, I guess. I mean, that's trying to find any kind of silver lining here, but you know, for people to tune in and actually watch the game. It's like, I'm interested, you know, adversity, you know, will either break you or make you, I think. And so we're going to find out what Michigan's made of, I think, on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Well, to talk about a little bit more position by position, some of those things, let's just jump into our over-unders.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So far, you beat me out last week by one, so I have a one-point lead over you on the season, 23 out of 38 to 22 out of 38. These Under Armors of under over-unders, goodness.
Sponsored by Under Armour.
Yeah, right? No, but they come from Neil. Good listener of the show. Provides them each week. So first off, 17.5 completions for Shea Patterson. So Dylan McCaffrey, it sounds like he's out with a concussion. You know, Joe Milton has been mentioned throughout the week when asked about by players, and then Josh Gattis. Would be surprised if he didn't play. I think we actually have a Joe Milton one later on. 17.5. I'm gonna take the over. My, you know, the head part, the calculative part, says take the under, but I think no, I'm gonna take the under. I think this is a game where Michigan wants to at least feel something in the ground game. I mean, Christian Turner, I don't think he was ready for that Wisconsin game. You know, as I don't mean to pick on him or anything, but I think you say the Rutgers game came at a right time. I think they could have used one more tune-up game before they played Wisconsin. To kind of one non-weird, non-Service Academy tune-up game before they played the Badgers. Technically, you're supposed to figure that out in the bye week if you're Michigan, but I could see them trying to establish the run, because I think they have a sense for what they have in the passing game. I have qualms about players. They should be more willing to break off routes, or they should be designing different kinds of routes that are more over the middle. But I think they know what they have there, so I'm going to guess that they go a little bit more with the run game, and I'll take the under on 17.5 completions. Steve?
I'm gonna go with the over. I mean, if you are going to hitch your wagon to Patterson, we know McCaffrey's probably not going to play. And yeah, Milton may play, but I you know, if they're going to go anywhere, it's going to probably, Patterson's probably going to have to be the guy. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've shown much in the passing game at all. Gattis mentioning that they're managing Charbonnet. I actually think the opposite. I think they're going to go even more pass heavy on Saturday, because really, could argue one of the biggest knock, I know that's the stat that you read at the beginning is a pretty damning stat as far as the run game goes, but they also couldn't protect Patterson either. So I'm leaning more towards that they're going to try to fix things in the pass. I mean, they're going to try to fix the whole stinking thing, but
right.
but I think you'll see a little bit more of an emphasis on the pass. And I, you know, 17 completions, not that many, you know, I don't think so. In a game like this, I think the opportunities should be there. And like I said, we'll learn if they're going to be there or not. But I'm going to go with the over for him on this one. I just, if not now, when, I guess, in that regard.
That's a very good question.
You know?
Yeah, and one thing to keep in mind with it is, if you're Michigan and you still are trying to win the Big Ten title, you don't get to pick and choose when you bring it out. I mean, you've got to build this identity, because at some point, you're going to go to Happy Valley, or you're going to go to, I mean, you're going to host Iowa, and you might be in another dogfight. And you have to know, your team has to know what they want to do. And they have to know what they want to be and how they're going to do it. I mean, the two-minute drill, the two times I've seen them do it right before halftime. Now, right before halftime is a little, it's kind of a weird two-minute drill, but it has been pitiful. I mean, they haven't done a thing. And so, yeah, in that sense, Might go with Patterson. By the way, Patterson is averaging just under 17 completions per game this season. So
yeah, I feel I feel more comfortable going with the over than in that case. Okay. I just think they have to throw the ball.
Yep, maybe. Maybe. Next one, 174.5 yards rushing by the running backs. Ooh, that is tough. Tough, Neil. I don't know if Charbonnet's going to play or how much he's going to play. I don't know what True Wilson's status is either. So does that mean Christian Turner's going to get – I don't think Christian Turner's getting 175 rushing yards. But suddenly I can't predict the score I want to predict if I'm saying Patterson won't complete 18 passes and the running backs won't rush for 175 yards.
Right. I'm going under. I'm just going to undercut you on that one. I'm a hard under on that one, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm going to I'll stay consistent, right? Be wrong in both ways. I'll say the over. I don't know who gets what. That is a lot of yards for running backs who haven't done it yet, but I mean, there was a time. I mean, Christian Turner did almost get 100 yards against Florida in the Peach Bowl.
He's shown flashes running the ball. So it's not like, I mean, I'm not saying it's a. I know I said a hard under, but it's. I mean, it's possible. He's shown it in flashes. And again, this is an opponent where if you execute, the opportunities should be there. So.
Mm-hmm. I'll say over. Oh boy, 12.5 passing targets for Tariq Black and Nico Collins. So. I think I am not a receivers coach, but I didn't have the All-22 film. But one thing I noticed against Wisconsin is that I think Ronnie Bell, you know, we've mentioned he clearly has a chemistry with Shea, but it felt like, I don't know exactly what everyone's routes were, but it felt like he was probably the best on the team as far as breaking off of what the designed route was. And like sensing when Shea was ready to throw the ball. And I think that was something that I think that might be part of why Nico Collins' passing targets are so low. Because, 6'4 dude who can catch every 50-50 ball seemingly. Yeah, you think he'd get a lot more targets. I am going to say under, but with the caveat that if Michigan should try to take what happened in that fourth quarter and replicate it. But I'm just going to say under. They've got a lot of different receivers to throw to. I'm sure this is a game where they're trying to, if everyone was mad at the media for pumping up Mike Sainer still. The team believed that he was someone that could contribute right now. And this is probably a game where it's time to get him involved. Some of the other underclassmen might be a good game to get their feet wet a little bit. I'm going to say under on 12.5.
I'm going to go over. As much as I think they want to get, would like to maybe get Sainer Sill or a Giles Jackson more involved, I think at the same time, you got to figure crap out with the guys that you're going to be riding with in the big game still. And, I'm going to go with the over on that one. And I think, again, I mean, I don't, at this point, it's like, if they're not going to feed Collins the ball now, when are they going to, because he just, like I've been saying it for 3 weeks, they need to start treating him a lot more like Braylon Edwards, and they haven't done it yet. Mm-hmm. And, but again, you gotta be watching the film thinking, and that's why I would say one positive for Michigan offensively has been that Bell has emerged. Because you got to think, at some point, that is going to open up. Like, it'll go the other way. What we always talked about is that the attention given to the other three guys would open things up for Bell. Well, now Bell is a horrible missed call away from having, back-to-back 100-yard receiving games, correct?
I think he had 81 against Army. He's had a couple very... He's like a couple steps away from being a... All-American candidate right now.
Honestly, yeah. You like a missed throw against Army early in the game and then a bad call,
The couple that went off his hands in the end zone and against Middle Tennessee.
Right. It's almost could maybe work the other way where it's like, you know, defenses are going to have to respect his abilities a little bit more. You know, and that push-pull was part of why I thought Michigan's passing offense was going to be incredibly difficult to stop this year. Especially, we knew that Bell was having a great fall camp, especially, you know, and that like I said, that push-pull between the three guys that everyone talks about and Bell would go back and forth, where if he started to produce, and you got to respect him too. And all of a sudden you got four legitimate guys just at receiver alone, you know? And so I'm wondering, you know, like I said, I think as much as it'd be beneficial for them to get some of the younger guys involved, I think they need to figure crap out with the guys that they're going to need in the bigger games down the road. So over.
Okay.
Long-winded over.
That's fine. Interesting that we have a clear philosophical impasse of what we think is going to happen. So far, we're disagreeing on three of them. So this will separate the fray a little bit. All right, 1.5 tight ends with at least one reception. So it sounds like Sean McKean's not going to play. I got to think Nick Eubanks gets a catch. Do they mix in another one in the passing game? I'm inclined to think so. That's kind of a coin flip type, but I don't know, maybe Eric All, maybe Mustafa Muhammad, maybe Luke Schoonmaker. They tout up, you know, they've said that they feel like they can go five deep at tight end. I know that's August talk.
It is August talk, yeah.
Yeah, but someone else, I mean, it's not going to be Nick Eubanks playing every snap and running every route, right. So I'll take the over.
I will too. I think Eric All will be the second guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
They're playing him on the goal line already. I mean, he did against Army. He had a good block that sprung one of the touchdowns. I mean, it feels like so. You know, I think we'd reported multiple times that the real battle at tight end in the fall camp was All versus All and Muhammad for the third tight end spot. And I mean, by usage alone this year, it's hard not to say that All's got to be the guy that's out front. I mean, it was Muhammad barely played, I feel like. So. And I know All was on the field quite a bit, at least late in the game last Saturday. So I'd have to go. I mean, if there is a second guy who's going to make that play, I think it's going to be him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, next one. 1.5 sacks allowed by the offensive line. That is a low over-under, but Rutgers is averaging one sack per game. And they have played Boston College, Iowa, and then UMass, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, I just 1.5 is really low. I'll say under. I think Michigan's offensive line, arguably deservedly so, is taking a beating in the among critics and skeptics. And I'm sure Ed Warner is digging into that group and saying, This has got to be better. Curious how they block some stunts. I mean, Wisconsin even did a couple spin moves to get by guys, and it worked way better than I think a defensive end doing a spin move should ever work. That was a little bizarre. Shea doesn't help necessarily in the sack avoidance because he does hang on to the ball for a long time. Whether it's him, the play calling, or the receivers, that's up to your own judgment, but they hang on to the ball a long time in the passing game, but I gotta say over. That's just too low. That's too low of a number. I know Rutgers doesn't have a great pass rush, but to predict that one or zero sacks allowed in a game where we're expecting them to at least throw the ball around a good amount, I'll say over.
I'm gonna agree. I'll go over.
Yeah, if you'd said 2.5, Neil, I might say under. But that's just too low. 2.5 passes completed by Joe Milton. Don't know. This is speculation. I think they're gonna have him play some. You know, reward him for his work as the second year, third string quarterback. I think you know, not knowing how long McCaffrey's gonna be out, you might need to have him as ready as possible when they play Iowa. Because you just never know when you're going to need your backup quarterback, and you certainly would rather see what they have in games than in practice, at least if you can control it. So I think he completes at least three passes. Steve?
I'm going to agree. I think that's, and then my logic is the same as yours. He's your backup quarterback right now who has very little experience. You have Iowa coming in next weekend. Yeah, I think you want to get him some reps to get him ready in case, you know, he's needed in that situation. Because, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. with the concussion stuff, it's a day by week, day by day deal. I mean, McCaffrey could be ready by next Saturday, but you don't know. So you got to have your guys properly prepared in that case.
All right, on defense, 3.85 yards allowed. 3.85 yards per carry allowed.
Over.
Okay.
I think over barely. Again, that's one of those like junk time type stats. True. I feel like where they could be, the game could be well in hand and they might break a run late in the game. I mean, that's so I'm going to say over, just not just for that reason. I'm not saying that Rutgers can't, you know, but they haven't shown that they can in legitimate time. I think you get to garbage time, you throw the young guys out there. This, again, one thing people also have to remember, and again, I know Michigan's got a lot of issues, but there is the 4-game redshirt rule still. So if they come out solid or play well against one of these inferior opponents and have the time and the reps, some very inexperienced guys are going to get a lot of playing time. So, and I think that's more likely defensively than it is offensively. So mm-hmm. with that in mm-hmm. mind, I could foresee a scenario where, you know, maybe late in the game they sustain some kind of run and get just over that number.
I'm going to say under because I think sacks count. In this, I assume Neal is not doing sack adjusted yards per carry. They held Army pretty low. Wisconsin, they did not hold low. Isaiah Pacheco, he's all right. Raheem Blackshear can do some ball carrying as well. He has about as many rushing attempts as receptions this season. It's just not a good rushing attack. And I think as a team, they're averaging about 4 yards per carry this season. I think Michigan can stop the run a little bit more than that. Because, you know, I remember the Boston College team they faced, that was a team that got blown out by Kansas. And, you know, maybe Kansas isn't what they used to be, but I think Michigan is better than Kansas right now. So I'm going to say under. I think this is, again, if we're talking sack adjusted, maybe they break one or two. I just don't think that they're going to be able to do much before those garbage time snaps. 50.5 completion percentage for Rutgers quarterbacks. Sounds like McLean Carter is doubtful with a concussion. So it's up to the Arthur Sitkowski show. He has completed 61.4% of his passes this year. But I'm taking it under on the 50%. Steve?
Same. I think that's the easiest one we've had so far.
Rutgers' passing stats against Michigan is just unbelievable. Yeah. At least under Harbaugh. Next one, 2.5 points allowed in the first quarter.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that's got me thinking, because so far they've given up a touchdown in their opening drive, the defense, every single game this year.
Wow.
Two of those were based off of turnovers. But does Michigan turn the ball over again? I mean, they have 11 fumbles and, what, two interceptions this year? So certainly some precedent that it could happen. I'll say under. I think things go relatively smoothly for Michigan in the first quarter. I think they're able to kind of prove their point in the first quarter and change. Could be wrong, but that's my rationale for them not allowing 3 points in the first quarter. Steve?
No, I'm going to agree too. I suspect they're going to get off to a better, because, you know, the thing about the turnovers is, and I know some of them have been self-inflicted, but there is just the fumble luck idea too. I mean, not every mm-hmm. one of these early turnovers has been some, you know, just complete breakdown. I mean, some of them have just been some helmets on some balls and some flukish, you know, like I said, fumble unluck. So I think Michigan kind of, that stuff smooths over a little bit. I think they hold them scoreless in the first quarter.
Okay, next one. 13.5 tackles combined for Jordan Glasgow and Cameron McGrone. Don't know what to make of that one. Oh, we did get a question. Oh, I don't have it up in front of me, but it was kind of asking about, kind of hinting more at the why no more McGrone. Oh, here, I pulled it up. Through 3 weeks, why hasn't Don Brown used two natural linebackers at once versus Wisconsin? It would have been nice to have seen Josh Ross versus and slash McGrone or McGrone slash Gill instead overutilizing undersized Kalik Hudson, Jordan Glasgow together. So I don't necessarily, I mean, Hudson and Glasgow are making plays.
Right.
You know, I saw McGrone. He missed a pretty bad tackle. Ross is, he had the stinger against Army, and he had, I think something ankle related happened in the Wisconsin game. So we might see more McGrone. Maybe Neil already knew that, and that's why he did Glasgow and McGrone. But, yeah, it is an interesting – I mean, it didn't look very good against Wisconsin. Nothing did, but it did seem like they were a little undersized at linebacker. So, yeah, does McGrone, someone who's like 235 pounds, does he add something? Can Devin Gill, who played a lot more last year, it seems like, than he is right now.
Agreed.
Could he provide maybe some size or some more tackling efficiency? As far as this question, Glasgow plus McGrone, I will say under, kind of a guess there. Not quite sure. Hard to tell what, unless, am I missing something on, was there a declaration on Ross's status or anything?
No, I'm not sure he's going to play. I mean, he was in a boot, so I'm not sure that, you know, if that's just overly precautionary, but he didn't return against Wisconsin, right, after he went out, so.
Yeah, he exited the previous matchup with a foot injury.
Right. I still would take the under there. I think it should just to hedge the bet there and say I'm not 100% sure that is McGrone necessary. I can see why.
Yeah.
I can see why he'd be the guy that I think people are sticking to that play where he made on Cone at the goal line as like, hey, this guy can play. But like you said, there were a couple other more miscues. Like, you know, and that the thing with McGrone, I know that we've reported this multiple times, has definitely showed it in flashes, but is still kind of learning how to play consistently. And I think that's what's kept him from maybe a bigger role. But yeah, I mean, talent-wise, I suspect he would be the guy to maybe, if Ross doesn't play, that he'd be the guy that would see.
Not Jordan Anthony, who stepped in against Army?
Not that. More so the idea that they, if they do shift things more around, that McGrone would be maybe the next guy. Because, yeah, Anthony would play for sure. I mean, he even met with the media this week, didn't he? So
Yep. So if you subscribe to Availability Theory, patent pending, yeah, he's in for a big week.
Right. So I was still going to take the under, though. That's a lot. It's a lot of tackles.
Yeah, Glasgow's only averaging 8 tackles a game. Certainly I don't mean it to be like, oh, it's only 8. But
no, in the context of the over-under. I mean,
Yeah. Still making plays. Still actually leads the team in sacks. Any thoughts on Joe's question about why go undersized? Because it is notable. I mean, you know, Kalik Hudson weighs in or listed at 220. Glasgow's listed at, I think, 226. Not exactly what you'd think of for your linebackers. I mean, not
a power
totally out
game.
Of position. What's that?
To try to stop a power running game with one of the best backs in the country. I think that's fair. But Glasgow's not somebody I'm going to – I mean, you could argue he's been the defense's best player so far this year. So
yeah, him or Uche are my picks.
Yep, his inclusion in any scheme right now for them is not a bad thing. Hudson, like you said, has made plays, but again, is just still plagued by inconsistency. I agree, though. You know, in that given instance, does that mean that they would bring that out against Rutgers, though? Not necessarily. Rutgers doesn't have, even there are guys that do run the ball, or there's not a Jonathan Taylor walking through the door. Not even, of course, not by skill, but not even really by style. You know, so I don't know if this would be the game where you would, you know, it almost feels like, yeah, that lineup would perform better against a team like Rutgers or a style like Rutgers than it would against, you know, like you said, like a Wisconsin where they're...
Yeah, so, some guys who can beat some of the angles. Because I got to imagine Rutgers is going to run a lot of screens, a lot of bubble screen type plays.
Yep.
Because they've got receivers who can, or they've got running backs who can catch.
Yep.
They don't necessarily have running backs who can do what Jonathan Taylor does.
They got a couple receivers, too, I think, that can make plays in the short passing game. Like, Bo Melton, I think, has had a really good year. Bo Melton was a guy that Michigan did like. You know, I think he was one of the few four-star level guys that Rutgers has reeled in the last few cycles. But he's a good-looking player. So, yeah, I agree. I think a lot of maybe dink-and-dunk type stuff and then hope to break a couple tackles and take one to the house. But, you know, the linebacker question, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to answer week to week. I think, yeah, it's obvious you could say now that they should have done that against Wisconsin, but I don't know if that means you'll see it more maybe against Iowa, right? I mean, Iowa's got the, you know, much more of a throwback style play. Maybe I think that'd be the better time to maybe look and see, you know, do they go that route against a team like Iowa versus what do they do this weekend?
Yeah. Yep. Something to keep an eye on. I like the question.
I agree. I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, to make a longer discussion, sure. I think they're the best playmakers. You know, and sometimes you're stuck like that. It's college football. It's not the pros. You don't get to go sign, you know, everybody that you want. You know, sometimes you just have to. Some years you don't have a Devin Bush there. You know, maybe it's a tweener year for Anthony or McGrone, or maybe it's a tweener year for the position. And I mean, they moved Glasgow inside. You know, Don Brown, he was funny when I asked him about it. He said he moved inside because I told him to move inside. But because he was someone that knew what they were doing, he knew how to be in the right place, and he knew how to make plays in practice. And he's showing that a little bit in games. Anyway, next question, 4.5 sacks and interceptions. So combined sacks and interceptions for Michigan. I'm going to take the over. I think this is a very easy havoc game. Havoc, of course, including tackles for loss and turnovers forced, in addition to sacks and interceptions. I don't know who's getting the sacks or who's picking passes off, but Sikowski, I think he has, 20 interceptions in his career, and he's the backup this year. Last year he threw 18 picks compared to 4 touchdowns. The offensive line is worse than last year. My opinion. No good offensive line stat to back that up, but yeah, I think Michigan's gonna be able to get a lot of pass rush, and I think that's gonna cause both sacks and picks. I think this is gonna be a box score friendly defensive performance for Michigan.
I gotta agree again. Take the over.
Last one. 3.5 three and outs forced by the defense. I think this is a relatively easy over. Maybe my stats are wrong. I mean, because even Wisconsin had... Oh, nope, they just had the one. But they had a couple that were close to it. Yeah, I think they forced 4 three and outs in this game. Seems almost too easy. Yeah. I feel like Neil knows something we don't know.
No, I think... hey, he's you know, he's primed to slip up every once in a while with a easy one, I kind of feel like. So I'm going to go with the... over as well.
This is the home game against Rutgers equivalent of...
Yep. Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it.
We had 12. Most of them were tougher. Feel like this one we got. That's our gimme. Anyway, finally, score prediction for the game. Steve, do you have one ready?
I think I said... Well, I haven't said anything yet. I haven't posted anywhere. I've been going back. I mean, I don't know, like 37-12.
Okay.
So I think Rutgers barely covers.
Yeah, I think that 28-point spread or whatever it is, that just seems so high for a team that is really struggling to put up points. I think it's going to – or not put up points, but I guess so. I was thinking do well. Teams that's really struggling should end of the sentence there. I was going to say something in the neighborhood of like 38-20. I just don't know where Rutgers is going to score. Because I keep, you know, I was thinking, Michigan's not going to fix this overnight, right? Their problems against Wisconsin, they don't get to go into Schembechler Hall and like turn on the light switch and say, okay, time to go. You know, the whole, they've been punched in the mouth, they want to punch back. But it's going to be more of a gradual thing because they have serious problems. They didn't forget to show up at Madison. They were really excited and confident and believed in themselves, and then got beat really badly. And so I think there are some problems that won't be fixed overnight. Offensive chemistry and cohesion, as you mentioned, is not necessarily going to – that's not – you don't snap your finger and do better. So I'm going to say – I'll say 30 to 10. I don't keep going back and forth. I feel like Michigan could put on the points a little bit more. I feel like they could hold Rutgers offense. I think what was it, 42-7 last year? So it's a little different, but at the same time, I don't know if Rutgers is going to score more than one score. I don't know enough. They do have a really good punter, by the way. He's looking really good so far. Might be battling Drew Chrisman and Will Hart for punter of the year. But they didn't score against Iowa. I got to think Michigan can put up a similar type performance. So I'll say 30 to 10. That's what I'll do. Anyway, so we're both predicting wins and sizable wins. And we'll keep an eye on some of the other things. And we'll discuss it all on Sunday, whether Michigan proved anything to itself, to us, to you guys as listeners. But for Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. Talk to you on Sunday.